Once again, we are live backstage here at the Arcata Theater with just, I don't even know what to say about this man, Chuck Negron of Three Dog Night. This guy, you know, in 1967 started it all. You're a young bucks, and then all of us, 67, right? 67, 68, 68. And, but then one really put it over the top. Yeah. The voice of, I guess if I said the voice of one, it's got a lot of meanings there, but really.
Yeah, I sang it, so yeah, that works for me.
Now, what was, okay, there was the day before one hit, you were thinking one way, you were a certain place in life, one hits, and then did it hit you like a truck? It was like, oh my God, what's going on?
Yeah, well, what happened was, we were having a sound check, and I think we were in Detroit. We were having a sound check, and I was back because the vocalists went later, and I was back, and the desk said, "There's a telegram for you." So I went and got the telegram, and I opened it up, and it was from the president of Glasgow, president of Dunhill, and he said, it said, you have gone, sold a million records. Yeah, this record's gold. And I went, oh, my God. So it was like, whoa, over the top. It was very, 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 very exciting.
Well, what was that environment? I mean, we hear about it. You talk about it in 69 and then Woodstock era and, in the early 70s. I mean, the environment of the time, was it exactly like the way it's perceived out there? I mean, well, partying all night?
Yes, that happened. There was definitely, you get to meet a lot of people because you're all hanging and, and partying. But you wouldn't think so, but the acts were very competitive. Mm. I mean, they just didn't go out up there and, just flowers and love. They did not want to be the worst band up there, and they wanted to be the best. So, they were fighting for positions. I saw Emerson, Lake and Palmer's manager fighting with Rod Stewart's manager.
Wow.
Because we were at the Pocono Festival, almost 100,000 people, and it had rained, and it was so late that everyone realized, God, there's only one plane left now to get out of here. So everyone was trying to get on and get out. So they ended up in a fist fight to get out of there. But for the most part, there was, it was a nice community of, people that were just, you don't think it's going to get that big. Mm-hmm. And then it does. So you really don't know how. I'll speak for myself. I really didn't know how to act. So I kind of, kept to myself, in a sense, and became an observer. And, but it was wonderful. It was a wonderful time.
Well, you know what? It's something to see, or something to hear, because there isn't a day when there isn't a Three Dog Night song playing.
Yeah, I hope so.
Somewhere. I mean, really, it's just amazing. You had 21 top 40 hits, but not just those. It's just all the other songs that you guys had, and they're constantly being played on radio and on all these other forms of media these days. Do you still get a kick hearing one?
Oh, I love when I put on the radio and I hear something. I go, oh yeah, and my daughter. I've been with my daughter when a record comes out. She'll turn the channel.
Oh, come on.
Hey, you know who that is? Dad, I know who it is.
Believe me, I know who it is. You tell me all the time.
But yeah, she's actually one time just turned a station. But I love hearing it.
It's got to be such a cool thing.
It is, especially after, all this time. Because there's a thing that happens to everybody in most walks of life, but definitely in sports and definitely in music, but almost everywhere. When you hit it really big, the time will come when that starts to slide.
Mm-hmm.
And for a young person, that's really... and for me, what it was we did a tour, and it was just going great, and we pulled into one parking lot. I said, "You guys sure this is the place?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "But there's no one here."
Oh, wow. See?
And there was one place on the tour, and that was the first sign.
That's part of it. That's part of the up and down, right?
And everyone was kind of silent. And it was like, oh, my God, this would all go away.
It's just got to be such a cool thing, because I had this conversation a little bit earlier with one of your band members, actually. when you think about, I have a 10-year-old daughter, and you think about the music that you guys, I mean, here it is. I mean, 1967, you know, it's going to be 50 years.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, next year, you know.
God.
I know. Here's the thing, though. Can you, I mean, you think about the, all the great entertainers out today, all the great acts, all the great bands, all the great musicians, all the great vocalists, the Taylor Swifts of the world, all these, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But can you, I can't imagine their music still. Nothing against them, it's great music, you know, but I can't imagine the music being as strong as it is today as it 50 years from now. I mean, what a thing that is.
I don't know, but that would be an interesting thing, because this genre and this era of music is the only music ever that has lasted this long, where there are actually formats all over the country.
Absolutely.
Playing this music, and it's not like some specialty thing. It's
right.
All over the place.
But you know what's cool? As a theater owner, as a venue owner, you know, I put on these great shows, and as I tell the audience, I say, you know what? I'm just here having a party with the people, the musicians, and the bands that I love.
That's a great job.
And it just so happens you like the same thing that I like, you know? But the reality of it is that there's an age group, a variety of ages, and one of my favorite parts about it is when I see those 12-year-olds out there with Who shirts and Three Dog Night shirts and Beatles shirts and Zeppelin shirts.
Yeah, yeah.
And
a lot of Beatles shirts.
Well, there's a lot of Pink Floyd. I mean, all the Three
Pink
Dogs.
Pink Floyd,
I mean,
too. Pink Floyd, yes.
Really big. And that's great, because I tell them, I said, not only is it cool because you're fostering our music, but you're also fostering future ticket buyers for me. So that's the cool thing. So, you know, Chuck, I mean, it's no secret. You faced your demons in this career.
Mm-hmm.
And I've read your book. Tremendous, tremendous. I mean, you opened up your soul. You opened up.
I did.
You know, you really, really did. And I got to commend you for that, because that couldn't have been easy.
No, I paid for it. When I finished that book, I went to a very, very dark depression. I developed these resentments and anger that I dealt with and let go. But getting deep into things that happened, I was unable or unwilling to turn it over and over again and say, I've got to forget this. And I ended up carrying, you know, like I was in jail and they held the key. You know what I mean? And so it was 2 years after that. It was very dark for me. And it was just the self-examination that I made doing that book, first of all, made me see what a terrible person I'd been, what a terrible things I'd done to people that I love. And it was not an easy thing for me to handle. And in the end, I couldn't really handle it. And my marriage fell apart. You know, because I was, you know, we got married, I was a happy guy, things were good, and
sure.
You know, I went to this very angry, dark, you know, dark place, and it took me really getting to a place of surrendering to the fact that God is everything or God is nothing, and asking for the forgiveness and learning how to forgive unconditionally. Not only, you know, I don't tell the person, so what I'm doing is forgiving for myself. You know, so, you know, I'm okay, and I'm not killing anybody.
Right, thank goodness. So would you say writing the book was healing?
Writing the book was fun and a real adventure. But when I started, I had a guy. The only reason I wrote the book was this guy came to me. I wasn't going to write the book. I've been asked by so many people, and I just didn't want to be another grok guy writing another book, glamorizing, sensationalizing tragedy. So this guy had won 35 Emmys, and he was a news guy, behind-the-scenes news guy that worked for Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
He's legit, 35 Emmys. Anyway, I was nominated over 100 times. He came to me and says, listen, I was actually helping his brother. His brother's trying to get sober, and I was helping his brother, and he heard me talking to his brother, and he came to me and he said, you know, you really should write a book. So anyway, he said, what I would do for you is I would corroborate everything, story that you say with two people. So you would know everything, because, you know, you might be worried that you're a little foggy. Yeah, sure. A little foggy. So every story I told, he went and searched out people, even Danny Hutton.
Really?
And Corey Wells. Corey Wells wouldn't talk to him. Danny did. But Corey's a very private person. You know, he probably when he even did the interview, he didn't give up
That's right.
anything, you know, concerning other people.
Right.
Or his family.
You're right.
Anyway, so he did, and he checked everything. But it started hitting me that, you know, God, I did a lot of things, and a lot of people know about it, you know.
Well, now, with your book.
Yeah. Well, no, and that's one of the things that that's made my marriage fall apart. You know, when you tell your wife, I'm going to write a book.
Yeah, right.
You know, oh, go ahead. Like, you know, nothing's going to happen, you know. So I did. When it became a bestseller, she didn't like it at all. She was getting calls from her relatives.
Oh, really?
You married this guy? What are you, crazy?
Goodness.
She's a lawyer, a Jewish lawyer.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, from a very, very... Her father just sold his interests in the NBA for $500 million. He just did. The,
really?
The biggest sports deal ever. Anyway, he started the ABA, owned the team. Anyway, so it was a whole other deal.
Yeah.
So, you know, so that was really hard on her. And then when I started doing TV and everything, she really didn't want me to. And then New Line Cinema called up, and they wanted to make a movie.
And you said no.
No, and I said, yeah. I said, let me go meet them. And I met them. And actually, her father came with me. And they had some great people in mind, and you know, Johnny Depp actually.
Johnny Depp was going to play you.
Way back then, this is before he did all this stuff.
Wow.
So that's who they wanted to play. I don't know if he would have, but anyway, when I told her that, she said, "I'm out of here. I'm leaving." And so I had a can. She asked me to leave. You know.
Nice.
Well, we have a child, so yeah. You know, what are you going to do?
Well, you know, this is a time. I mean, we recently lost your brother in music,
yeah.
Corey Wells.
Yeah.
And we were fortunate enough to work together 3 or 4 times. And you know, what a soft-spoken sweetheart with a great smile.
He's a nice man.
And he was just a great guy. I mean,
he was a kind of a fragile guy because he worked for years in a relationship that was abusive, and it really wore on him because he wasn't that way, you know.
What was it like back in the day, 72, 73, 74, the three of you guys, Danny, Corey, and yourself? I mean, did you guys hang out a lot? Did you do a lot of high fives?
Danny and I hung out. I got invited to Corey's for dinner, but he didn't invite me. His wife did because she just didn't like that he didn't do anything. And she trusted me not to say anything. And Corey's not here with us, so I'm going to tell you this story. She never told him this. Corey told his wife he was going fishing. So he went out and he went fishing. And, you know, of course, he wasn't going fishing. He was whatever he was doing, I don't know. So he ran to a fish store and he bought a fish. And he brought the fish home. And when she was cleaning it, it had shrimp inside it.
How did he address that?
She never told. She told me. I said, "Aren't you angry?" She goes, "Hey, you know, there's got to be a little wiggle room. There is none here. I'm not going to bring it up."
Yeah, right. Oh my gosh. Are you?
But how she used to get embarrassed is so terrible. She'd get a bottle of Liebfrau Milch, wine. And she poured out, she put like a $300-$400 bottle of wine in there. And she showed me the sticker, she lift a sticker up. I'm getting
it. Funny lady, sounds like.
Hysterical, beautiful lady.
Really, I'm sure.
They were high school sweethearts. Well, they were together
really?
All those years.
If there was somebody that you could induct into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, who would you like to hand that honor off to?
Well, I'm glad Chicago's going in. I think that they deserve. They were so unique when they came out. No one was like them.
That's right.
I mean, no one's like you know, pretty much. You know who would be a weird group, but I've seen them work the Turtles.
Mm.
I think that Howard Catlin is one of the great, great, great singers. I worked with him. I saw him every night. The guy didn't miss a beat one night.
Really?
So unfortunately, you know, he's. You know, it's just in kind of a happy, funny band, you know, so he doesn't get the credit. I would, you know, if I could, I'd induct Three Dog Night. I'm sad. Now, I'll be honest, it's very funny. I don't care anymore. because Corey's gone. Yeah. And that would have been important to him. It's not that important to me. I would rather be inducted by myself.
I got you. All right. I'll give you that.
Okay.
I'll give you that.
Okay.
I'll give you that.
Okay.
You're a fun guy. I just can't believe it's taking
my whole family. My whole family. Oh, yeah, it's taken a long time to get here.
I know. I can't believe you're finally here at the Arcata Theater.
It's taking Taylor Negron, my cousin, yeah. One of the funniest men alive, and my uncle. Oh, my whole family's silly people.
Now, have you always been this way, though? I mean, you seem
no,
like
no,
a prankster.
No, no, I was very... What?
Are you a prankster? You seem like
no,
a prankster.
No, I'm not a prankster. I'm not a prankster. But I will embarrass you in front of
well, that's good
your
to know.
Mother.
That's good to know. It's good to know.
No, I'm not a prankster. I was very shy. I was a very shy kid. I had a lot of stuff wrong with me. I had a weak eye that roamed around. So they covered the good one with blacked out of glasses, like a patch, but it was glasses that were blacked out.
Mm-hmm.
And I had corrective shoes on that came up to here.
Really?
And a blood disorder, and I had boils.
Holy, and look at you now.
No, it's like a mess. I was a mess. I learned to fight, though, I'll tell you.
I bet.
Well, no, I wouldn't take anything from anybody. You know, I'm not anybody's target. I don't know why I was that way, but I was. But people, you know, people took advantage.
My gosh.
But then I got big. I got big and became a good athlete. And thank God I could sing because I don't know what else I'd do.
Well, thank God that you kept singing. Thank God that you're still here today doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, your show, we just had a show, just finished it, and you're very generous with your time. Especially
after
such a physical performance.
Yeah, well, no, was,
I mean, really, the crowd was out of their minds.
Great, but that, let me tell you about that. This place is great. There's actually kind of a thing going on here where they get up and they get involved. It's kind of, I could see that this is something that happens here.
You're
right. Very, very, very nice. I mean, my guitar player, I've never seen him go down and...
He said this is one of the best nights of his career.
There you go, and he
said that.
And he showed it.
He enjoyed it.
He showed it. I'm whistling. I'm Obama.
No, everybody was loving it. They were singing, dancing. I mean, you had them going.
This is a nice place.
Thank you.
You know, you got a nice thing going here, and, you know, you're grateful for it and happy with it. And that's, you know, because most theater owners are a little short, a little...
I'm tall. Look at me.
No. I mean, abrasive. Because... things never end. Everything does never gets done.
Yeah.
And you know, and you either got to flow with that, or you know, you become a little neurotic.
No.
You know, so you seem to be. Well, you can see you put time into the place.
Well,
that's nice.
I'm a fan. I'm a fan. I mean, I'm sitting here with one of my heroes. Are you kidding me?
You're very, yeah.
But it's true. Again, you know, this is your stuff. I've got, you know, and you hear this and you take it, I don't know, anyway, because if someone says, I grew up listening to you and everything, but it's true. I grew up listening to it. I continue listening to it.
Oh, that's nice.
You know, you're the music that I'm playing on a summer day with my windows rolled down, and I'm playing the dashboard keyboard, and I'm playing the steering wheel guitar, and, you know, that's the music, music.
I do that, too, to a lot of stuff.
For sure.
Yeah.
You know? Well, thanks
not
for being
as much
here.
Not because my daughter, I have a 15-year-old, rides to me. And she's abusive. It's, you know, it's like, you know.
She's a Justin Bieber person, probably.
Well, yeah, she just, you know, this is dad in the eyes and whatever they do. I'm doing an album with them. I'm doing an album with, she's 15, her sister's 22, just turned 22. And we have an album, it's called Negron, and we're just doing the sweetening.
Really?
Some really, really great songs, and they sing great harmony. So we're doing... three harmonies and three different singers. So
they're doing your music?
Yeah, original music.
Wow.
Yeah.
So would you bring them back here? Would you do it here?
Well, I don't know if I, you know, trust
me.
Getting them in the studio was, you know, I mean, it was like, you know, Dad, I'm busy.
Well, next time you're coming, you gotta have
them. One's graduating, so it's gonna be easy. They were both singing, this is funny, they were both singing in the, you know, then the data break. And the engineer goes, check this out. Can you tell, are they moving in there? Or are they? I said, I don't think so. Because there's a clicking, there's noise. And I stood up, and I walk in, and they're texting. Do the takes. The text.
No way.
Really, for sure. Just texting.
You're kidding me.
Yeah.
Well, that's unfortunately, and I've got a 10-year-old daughter, same thing. You know, you try to have dinner, and she's doing this thing. She's watching videos, YouTube, everything during dinner.
Yeah, you got to stop that at dinner.
I threw, you know those Corona beer commercials? They take the phone, they skim it off the water. That's what I did with her phone out the backyard.
Yeah.
I said, just can't have that. Yeah, Chuck, thank you for being
here.
Thank you! I mean, it's a big deal for us.
Well, you're very kind. You're very kind.
Backstage with one of the greatest voices in rock and roll.
I am good.
You're great. Still are.
Oh, I'm bad.
We'll see you next time backstage here at the Arcata Theater. Chuck Negron.
Thank you.
You are the best.